Hey guys, and welcome to the CEO After Dark show. Today I have with me Erika Zeigita, a neuroscientist that has moved into the digital marketing, digital agency / e-commerce space, and has done pretty incredible things like building up an agency to 84 people, launching her own recruiting company, and most recently, an e-com brand. I met with Erika. It's a funny story because she was recommended to me by someone. I reached out for help. It was when I was building the agency and I wanted to talk about like operations and recruiting. We got into an argument. Didn't actually work at that point. But the more I saw her content, the more I saw her on LinkedIn and the social posts that she was doing, the more I started respecting her. And we kept in touch. I think she's a brilliant person and I think it's going to be a great episode. Erika, thank you for joining.
Thank you, George, for a very nice introduction. I love the part about us getting into an argument. As I told you back then, I still don't remember why we argued, but yeah, it's great to be here.
It's mostly me. I believe you did not reply quickly on me, and like I have very low patience. I'm like, oh, she's not replying. She's not interested. She doesn't want my business. You know how things are when it's remote. And I suspect, having worked with a lot of remote businesses, you've probably had a lot of things happening, like in regards to miscommunication. But before we get into that, tell us about yourself. Like, who are you? Who's Erika?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Erika. I am the founder of a staffing and recruiting agency. And I'm also recently co-founded an e-commerce brand focused on hair care products. So this is probably what describes me professionally. Otherwise, I'm just a person who's, you know, hustling, trying to build something, challenging myself and growing.
That's cool. And how did this start? Because I know your background is in neuroscience, correct? And like, how does a neuroscientist like get into all of that?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting question because there was no path, you know, like it's not like I did it consciously. I just took opportunities. I differentiated what's a distraction and what's an opportunity. So I always took the right opportunity, I guess. So I ended up being where I am right now. Neuroscience was not something that I initially thought I'm going to do. I thought I'm going to be a doctor and I studied to be a doctor. But then I wanted to leave Lithuania very much. And the only way to begin with was to start in science. So I went to do neuroscience. And after that, there were lots of opportunities and I just took them because I think in the third or fourth year, I realized that working in a lab is not going to work for me. I like people. I like talking to people. I like engaging. And, you know, that's not what you get in a lab. So
I think the lab is pretty brutal. Like there's long hours. It's very hard work. Like it's, I guess, very competitive also because like all research are super smart. So it's like, it's a tough life, I think.
It is tough, especially if you are working on some big project, you need to get funding and, you know, the competition is quite high. It is tough, but it's also, for me, it was like the most important criteria was that it was lonely and I didn't want to do it. I just didn't see myself. And it was hard at that time because, you know, you are young, you don't know what you want, you don't know what's out there, but you know that this is not what you want, but you also don't know what to do else. So I don't know, I just took opportunities. I went into project management. Then I discovered Upwork, which is so funny. And I joined a 4-people agency that was in New York. I was the 4th person actually to come on board. And I joined as a personal assistant. So that was a big shift because I was a neuroscientist. I had project management experience, but I joined to be an assistant. But, you know, it got me later on where it got me. So I guess it was a smart move.
I think they got very lucky to find you.
Probably.
What happened there? I know what agency you're talking about. How did they grow so fast? They were, at least in the past, like super popular. They were everywhere for a time.
Yeah, yeah. So as I said, when I joined, we were very small. We're only focused on Facebook ads. And it was in 2018, I guess. So Facebook ads was kind of on the rise, not at its peak, but on the rise. And I think the one very good move that the agency made was focused a lot on the creatives. So we added in-house creative service. And this was the strongest service that the agency delivered. And I guess as a result of that, a lot of clients came to us, we became quite popular, let's say, or known. And yeah, and the agency grew quite a bit. We went from 4 people to 84 within a span of 2 years. And yeah, it was like from $0 in revenue to 4 million. So it was a big and fast growth.
Fairly similar experience, not in an agency. It was like an e-commerce company. They actually held multiple stores. And for me, like I started as a copywriter initially there. And for me, this fast growth, like it was exciting, but also difficult because you were like, I was a copywriter and then I was the lead copywriter. And then I was the marketing manager. And then I was the marketing director. And suddenly I was managing people older than me. So like, it was a little bit of a challenge. Like, how did you experience that?
Yeah, I mean, I had the same challenge because I went from personal assistant to project manager, which was initially what I was, I guess, good at that time. Then I went to operations management because I really liked operations and I became the COO of the company. So it was also a very fast growth. I guess, you know, I always say this, that when the agency grows, not everyone is able to catch up with the growth. So my way of, you know, catching up with the growth was always to try and stay ahead of the curve. So I always invested a lot of time in learning. I networked a lot. You know, I watched courses. So I tried to kind of develop myself, also speak with people who are smarter and know more than I do in a particular area. And I guess that helped. But I always say it's also probably a personality trait and a work ethic that play a big part of it. You know, I'm very ambitious. I like to say I'm hardworking and I just, you know, do things consistently. This is my motto. I just do things consistently. And then I know at some point it will work out.
And how did you go from like, how did you decide to launch your own business? I guess is my question, because you would imagine like as an external viewer that you had like a good role, like in a good company, things were kind of good enough, right? Like what made you say, I'm going to take the plunge, take the risk and do something of my own, which it's always a little bit scary, I guess, when you haven't done it before.
Yeah, it is very scary. I guess I never, you know, I never took any of the risks, I don't know how to say it in English, but I was never bold about taking risks. I actually did it very consciously. I, you know, kind of measured what's the right amount of the risk. So it wasn't like I started the business and I quit the agency immediately. No, I actually transitioned slowly into that. How I decided to build the business? Well, I remember to this day when I was interviewing for a personal assistant role, and the CEO asked me, what's my goal in life? I said, I want to have my own business. And marketing is one area that I want to learn a little bit more about. And I said, that's why I want to join a marketing agency and learn from you guys. So it was always in the plan. I just never knew what that business is going to be, because often people say you need to have a brilliant idea to have a business. But I don't think it's about idea. I think it's way more than that. So it was very natural. I always knew this is something I'm going to do. So when the moment came, I just did. And the moment came when people started to ask for some consultations from me.
I'm super curious if from a recruiting perspective, is this a good answer to get? Like, do you want to hire people and work with people that want to have their own business? Because obviously it shows a certain level of initiative, independence. So it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing in the sense that probably there's an end point to it, right? Like they're going to leave eventually and they're going to do their own thing.
You know, I will give my perspective on this, but I think it's everyone's opinion and everyone is right to have their own opinion. As long as the person says that this is their goal, I would hire them because I know that they would work really hard. I also know that I can build a career path that's designed to get them to where they want, which means they will be more motivated. And that also means that when the time comes for them to leave, we'll have everything prepared for them to go on and do their own thing. We'll have the right team to replace. We'll have the right, you know, resources put in place. So I don't see how this is a bad thing. I think people who want to have their own business are usually more ambitious, but of course, there are people who say they want to have their own business, but they don't do anything about it. So that's also like, you know, what kind of people we're talking about. But I don't see the problem with that, to be honest. And I know actually there are some companies that actually hire people, and I just don't remember the name, but there are companies that hire people who want to be CEOs of their own company in the future. And then the whole employee development path is designed towards helping them get to that point. So I think it's pretty interesting as well.
That's a cool perspective. I'm just thinking that if an organization grows, you need people that not necessarily lack ambition, because ambition is not a bad thing, but you also need someone that wants to like do the things that don't necessarily, like they are not managers, but like someone needs to do the actual work also, right? And if everybody wants to be the CEO, then that can be a little bit tough.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, you know, like it's like with everything, that example does not mean that they hire only people who want to be CEOs, but they do encourage people who want to be CEOs one day to come and join them. I agree with you. I think all kind of people are needed. Not everyone wants to join a company and leave after 2 years to do their own thing. There are people who want to join the company and stay there for 20 years. And it's brilliant as well, because you have someone who's very loyal. As long as they're motivated and they do things, it's amazing for you as well. And it's a win for them. So I agree. I think all kinds of people are needed.
Can you tell us a little bit about recruiting and staffing company like Prozana? What do you guys do specifically?
Yeah, so right now we are recruiting people for e-com businesses and marketing agencies remotely. So we work with mainly with clients in the US and the UK, and we recruit people from US, Latin America, UK, and then Europe. So this is what we do. A small part of it is also consulting those businesses on how to structure your team, how to plan your hirings, how to develop people, how to onboard them, and overall how to improve the workforce dynamics. So this is what we do at Fursana right now.
I think it's super interesting because you do have this background in the agency, which basically means that you know, like, what personality traits does a media buyer need to have? Like, how can you tell whether someone's good in creatives? And I think that niche expertise is really kind of the unique advantage that you guys bring to the table.
Yeah, I'd like to think so too. And I know that the clients that we work with, they always appreciate it as well. Because we understand, at the end of the day, the agency that I mentioned at the very beginning, the one we grew from 4 to 84, like, we recruited all the people ourselves. So it was a lot of learning, of course, a lot of mistakes as well on the way. But at the end of the day, the retention of the people and the success was quite high.
What I find interesting is that, like, in my view, having one business is tough. Having two businesses is tougher. So, like, what made you say, okay, I have this company, I'm going to launch another company? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, to one extent, I want to say that, like, startups overall are hard, I agree. But not every startup is going to be successful. So some startups at the beginning, they're considered more like projects. So you're testing the waters, you're seeing how it works. So managing two projects or like a one bigger project than the other, I think it's okay. I also like to practice what I preach. And I always preach to founders and decision makers in agencies and e-coms that you need to build a team in a way that allows you to work more on the business related activities rather than in the business. And I think this is where I got with Prosana specifically. Like, I don't do recruitment myself anymore. I have the team. We have a lot of automations in place as well. So basically it's automation and delegation, the two things that help me to free up my time. And I always wanted to test the waters of e-commerce. So I'm like, okay, why not? But of course, you have to have a good setup to be able to handle it because the workload does increase significantly, especially at the beginning, as you can imagine.
What's the brand about?
Sassy Scalp. It's a brand offering solutions to treat dry scalp problems. So flakes, dandruff, and so on.
So like a skincare, like oral supplement, like creams?
No. It's a hair care products. So shampoos, conditioners, masks, serum. Yeah, but it's all for dry scalp problems. It's still, you know, new. We just recently launched it.
I think the product might be new, but I think like the niche, if you will, is kind of booming. I know a lot of companies that make a lot of money in that space. So it's a good, good idea.
Yeah, I mean, we started designing the products quite a while back. It's also the problem that I had myself. So I know how painful it is, especially for women, because we have long hair. The flakes, they are usually very visible, especially if you have darker hair. So yeah, designed the product, took a while, and now we just launched it officially, so everyone has access to it.
It's cool, because if you take those two projects, and if you think of like what made you start them, it's the same pattern. You see a problem, you solve it, and then you solve it for yourself. In this case, now you want to solve it for others. You solved it for the agency, now you want to solve it for others. So I think that's a good learning for people, that the business ideas like basically lie in solving problems.
Yeah, I think so too. Also, you know, another like big reason why I wanted to do e-commerce, as we talked, I've been a part of the agency already. So I grew an agency team and I've seen what it takes to grow an agency team. The agency was working primarily with e-commerce businesses. So I know of, as well how e-commerce functions. And that's why we decided to offer service in marketing agencies and e-commerce. But I don't have that actual practical experience of building an e-com team. Not my own, let's put it this way. I have experience building e-com teams for clients and it worked great, but I also want to do it myself to see how I, you know, how the founder feels. So I think this is also going to be a great learning curve, which will gonna add a big benefit to my skill set.
That's a good way of thinking about it, actually. I like that. And what kind of challenges have you had in all of this journey? Because I'm gonna make an assumption that probably like working in that agency as the CEO was tough, but having your own company was even tougher, most likely.
Yeah. A lot of problems. I mean, which problems I didn't have. I always joke that when you run a startup, especially a service-based startup, you always have three problems. You have people problem, you have client problem, or you have cash problem. And those problems, they just keep changing. So whatever, you know, you have client problem, you don't have enough clients, but you have too many people. Then you have too many clients, not enough people. And then the cash somewhere is also in between. So I think I had all kinds of problems at this point. Probably the biggest journey overall is learning how to do it all myself. So it's a personal growth that has been the biggest challenge, to be honest. Like learning how to prioritize, learning how to delegate, learning also how to be a good leader, how to build a company culture, and then also learning, you know, how to deal with my own insecurities, psychological state, and so on. So lots of different problems, I guess.
And I guess also physical things, because I've seen you talk a lot about like difficulties with sleep, for example, which is something, by the way, that I also have. Like even like this day, I didn't sleep well at all. So what happened there actually with the sleep? I think you did some sort of therapy or...
Yeah, I've done a therapy. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you. So what happened? This is, you know, sleep is part of your psychological well-being. So if you cannot sleep, most often it's a side effect of you having some sort of psychological issues. Either it's like you have anxiety, you have even more serious health conditions. I occasionally could not sleep. Yes, that was a problem. For me, it was more the problem of I cannot fall asleep because my brain just doesn't stop working. And then I think it was end of 2022, December. And to this date, I still have a weird relationship with December. Like at the end of December, it's just like everyone wants to finish everything. Everyone wants to plan the next year. Everyone needs everything right now before they go on holiday. And in addition to that year, we're also planning to go to Spain for a couple of months. So I think all of the stress added up. And it was Christmas Eve when, you know, we had dinner, we went to bed, and I just didn't sleep the whole night. I just couldn't fall asleep. And I don't even know what I was thinking about. It just couldn't fall asleep. But I was like, okay, it's stress. It's because I'm changing the environment. I'm moving away from home. And like, this is all because of that. And then we came to Spain. And for 2 months, I struggled with sleep big time. Like I would fall asleep at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And then you have to start your day at 7. And I always like to start my day early. And I cannot wake up because I haven't fallen asleep yet. So it was really, really tough. And then I think it was probably sometime in February when one night, which is going to be very open and personal of me to share, one night I think it was 6 o'clock in the morning and I did not sleep yet. And it's not like I sit at my laptop and I work and I'm like, oh, I cannot sleep. No, I actually lay in bed and I just don't sleep. And it was the time when I literally was scared to be alone and with myself because I didn't know how it's going to end. And it was very scary, but thankfully I think it's a personality trait. I talk about it a lot and I'm not afraid to say how I feel. So I called my friend who is a doctor. He's in Canada and I told him like, man, I have problems. I cannot sleep. I think I'm going crazy. I cannot control my thoughts. I'm scared. And then he just literally puts like kid style to-do list, like, okay, so 8 o'clock, you call the doctor, you go to the doctor, they give you some medicaments, you will fall asleep. And then we'll think about the long-term plan, what you have to do. But right now, the first thing you have to do is you just have to sleep. And this is what I've done. I went to the doctor, they got me tablets, and that night I slept. But I knew that this is not a long-term solution.
I think the worst thing, and I can relate to what you're talking about, by the way, is that you can't sleep because you're thinking about something, and then you're starting to think about you not being able to sleep. And it spirals out of control because that makes you worried, like, why am I not sleeping? And then you're starting to think, what am I going to do tomorrow? And then you're starting to think, oh, I'm going to feel terrible. And like, it just spirals out of control. And there's a lot of research about sleep. Basically, it affects everything. If you don't sleep, it's like you're half dead, basically. It's like it affects you in a very, very, very bad way. You can't think straight. You can't feel straight. You can't function. It's a terrible thing. For me, what I tried, I don't know what medicine you tried. I tried melatonin, ashwagandha, like valerian root, like a bunch of different things. And those help. But what I also found was that the next day when I was like waking up, it was kind of difficult to start my day. I was like, I did not feel like that alert, you know. And I had to stop that. And ultimately, funny as it may sound, like for me at least, what actually helped more over the long term, and now I'm having issues because I'm not doing it, is like to exercise during the day and like avoid drinking like too many stimulants, like coffee, like things like that. When I did that, like physically exerting myself and then not stimulating myself beyond what's normal, you know, because I do abuse a lot of like caffeine and stuff like that, I could sleep again. That was my experience.
Yeah, I mean, I actually just want to add the one thing that you said, you know, exercising, like having a proper diet. I don't know if you remember, but in school, at least for us, they always said that the most important three things that you have to control in your life is like what you eat, how much you exercise, and how much you sleep. So those three things, they've been true for a very long time, and people just forget and they get one wrong and then everything else kind of gets messed up. So I totally agree with you. I think like physical exercise, having a good diet, those are crucial things. The thing about my situation was that I don't actually drink coffee and I avoid caffeine at all. So I don't consume any of that. So for me, the problem was more psychological. So I did the therapy, as you mentioned. I mean, we talked about it at that time, I remember. So I actually went to therapy, did a, what's called rapid transformational therapy, to just, you know, try to understand what is the root cause. And it's funny, but the root cause was actually stemming from the team problems that I at that time faced. We were growing a team quite fast, and there were some things, and I was taking it really personally. And it also kind of went back to my early years of my life. And kind of reflected, and then it triggered something in me. And that was like, as a result, I just couldn't sleep. So I think it's important always to get to the root cause. But routines, establishing routines, what you eat, how you exercise, when you go to sleep, when you finish work, those are crucial as well. And this helps actually right now. I try to go to bed at the same time. And it's actually amazing because I go to bed at 10 and now I'm able to wake up at like 5:30. Which is amazing. I have enough time to sleep. I also have enough time in the day to work, to exercise, and then enough time in the evening to rest before I actually go to bed. So routine is crucial as well.
Am I correct to assume that like what you were experiencing like internally probably affected like the team itself also?
Yeah. Question mark, you know, because when I show up to work, I show up like feeling okay. Like I do things and I try not to, you know, show to people how I feel or say that I didn't sleep last night. Probably the only person who always knew this was my business partner. And I always told her how I feel. So she was very supportive. I have no doubt it affected her in some way as well. Because first of all, she's also a friend. So she was worried about it. But overall, to some extent, maybe it did affect the team. I think, you know, it always starts at the leadership.
For me, what I've noticed for myself is that not just with sleep, but generally speaking, when something is affecting me, like on a personal level, I mean, obviously I don't go to work and I say, oh guys, like I have the, it's not like that, but the quality of my decisions and the quality of my output kind of goes down. And the broader point I want to make, and I'm making this for posterity also for people that will listen, is that if we think of ourselves like the owner of the company, if you think of yourself as what keeps the company together in a sense, you kind of owe it to the people within the company to take care of yourself. Because if you don't and it affects you, which is likely, I mean, some people might be stronger and it won't show that much. For some, it will show, but it affects you nonetheless. You are doing them a disservice. And if you start thinking about it that way, then it gets really important to kind of take a step back and say, like, how can I also replenish myself? Like, not just like hustle and grind and grind and grind, which can be interesting. It can be fun even in certain periods of your life. But if you do this like constantly, then eventually you're going to burn out.
Yeah. But I also think, you know, it's good to think you owe it to your team. But I would also say that you owe it to yourself first. To be able to sleep, to be able to feel well. Because sometimes for some people, thinking that I owe it to people can also have additional stress. And then that would add up to not being able to sleep. But it is true. It is true. Like how you feel, how you are, what kind of mood you come into work, it always affects the team. And they always feel it. Because even the message you send, how it sounds, how it's written, that also will differ. So I agree.
100%. So you have had quite the journey, I would say. Like you've done a lot of things, you've seen a lot of things. If you were to kind of look back, talking about operations in the context of like an e-commerce company, e-commerce, like basically the type of business we're in, which is like usually remote, usually multicultural, usually international, etc. Like, what's kind of the number one thing that you'd say you've learned about all of this? Like, how can a company function like that? Because, okay, it's 2024, there's a lot of it, but to some people still, it feels a little bit weird that, oh, like, really, you have people in like Spain and Netherlands, like how, you know, like they don't really understand.
Yeah. One thing I actually learned, and this is something that I was discussing with a friend yesterday, is that, you know, building a remote team is not for everyone, and it will never be like a choice for everyone. And it's okay. Like, some people will have to be in an office. Some people will decide, or some companies will decide to be hybrid. Some will be remote. I think when you make a decision to build a remote business, you especially as the founder, you need to make a decision that you're going to give trust upfront to people. Because if you're not going to give that trust, the company culture will suffer big time. Things will not work out. People will leave because they will not be happy. And then you will blame it all on being remote. When in reality, it starts with trust. And you know, trust is like either you give it up front or you let the person earn it. In remote, you give it up front. Because I've seen a lot of businesses not be able to function remote, mainly because the founders don't trust their team. So it's either, as I say, it's either the founder problem that they don't trust the team, or it's the team problem. Maybe you don't have the right people.
How do you mean trust? Like, in terms of, are they doing the work? Are they not doing the work? Like that type of trust?
Yeah, that kind of trust. Primarily, because that's, I think, the big concern that people have is like, oh, the person is in Spain or the person is in, I don't know, Arizona. How do I know that they work? Do I ask them now to track with screen recording? Like, that's not always the option. Sometimes maybe it has to be implemented as a short-term solution, but not like that's not a solution when building a remote team.
For us, we use time tracking. We use Time Doctor specifically, but we don't take screenshots and stuff. Like, it's just tracking the tasks. And the reason why we do this is not because like we want to monitor what people do or anything. It's just to ensure that we allocate enough time to like every client and we utilize the resources in a clever way, basically not like doing things that don't ultimately make the company revenue. Are you against that, or is that like good to go?
No, actually, we also use time tracking ourselves. We don't, again, take screenshots of the screen. We don't record the screen. We do that. Like, we record the time mainly because we want to see how profitable we are on some projects. We also want to see if, you know, someone doesn't have enough work or they have too much work, because sometimes it's really hard to say, you know, what you've been doing the whole day, and people cannot recall. They just know they work the entire day and overwork themselves. So I think time tracking is a good solution, but it has to be implemented for the right reasons. So as I said, if you implement it because you don't trust the people, then it's not the solution, because you will always find something that will annoy you. You will always find something that's not right in your mind or in your opinion. So, and then you will always, you know, bring it up, and that will affect the company culture.
About team development, like basically, okay, you decide to build a company. It's a remote company. Now you need to grow a team. Like, how do you go about this? Like, imagine that somebody is like basically a freelancer and they want to start slowly building a team around them. Like, how would you advise that they do that?
I can give multiple advices based on what perspective we're looking at. If it comes to like, what kind of people should I hire first? I would say you first of all, try to outsource all of the admin work and get people to do all of the admin work that's time consuming. Then you start outsourcing your strengths. And then you start, or for example, if you're adding additional services, then you add people that are good in those services. So this is how I would go about in terms of like who to hire next. When it comes to hiring itself, first of all, I would define what kind of people I want to have around me. So I would define what kind of team do I envision having in terms of like how I want them to be. Kind of start manifesting in a way what kind of people you'll be looking for, because that will be very important. Otherwise, you'll start hiring anyone and everyone who just looks good on paper, but not necessarily match the company. So I would say this is also a very important one that I would add. And then the third thing, if it's a remote team, it's crucial that you have a very solid infrastructure that's going to support remote work. And the infrastructure is pretty basic. You have a good tool set, like tool stack, let's put it this way, tool stack. Because, you know, if you're gonna, and I've seen this several times, if you're gonna talk with your team on WhatsApp or Messenger, it's not gonna be sustainable. So you need to be able to assign work somehow, communicate about that work, be able to hop on calls, be able to, you know, have video conferences and so on. So I think the setup is also very crucial.
What about like the, okay, now we have decided to build a team. We've started building the team. How do you develop the people within the team? Like kind of like coaching or developing a career path, as you said earlier. Like how does that work?
Yeah, so standard answer would be...
I'm asking you for very selfish reasons, by the way.
Yes. So I will tell you, this is very interesting. And this is actually coming from my experience for a very long time. I thought you have to sit down with people, you have to build development plans, and then you have to regularly meet to talk about those development plans. I think in a startup right now, this is my learning personal, you don't have to do all of this very formally. Like, you just don't have the time for it. So one very important thing is to get people in the first place who are ready to develop themselves and they are ready to be proactive, because you don't have the time to handhold them. You just don't have the time. There's so many things happening in a startup that you're just trying to get clients and get the business running. So how can you also have the time to, you know, sit down with people and talk about things constantly and show the initiative? Like, they need to show the initiative. However, I do think you need to regularly speak with them to be able to support them. If they need something, you provide your input. But as I said, I wouldn't do it as formally. You don't necessarily have to have like sheets and documents to fill out, but just like a normal conversation where you can give advice. I think it is needed. So this is my answer. And this is from my practical experience.
Is it similar for role descriptions? And I'll tell you what I mean. I suspect it's difficult for a small company that's growing. It has been difficult for us, for example, to perfectly define the exact scope per role. And sometimes there's a little bit of overlap. And the problem with that is that it creates confusion, like who does what? And then you need to go back and see, okay, what are you guys actually working on? Okay, like that person does this, that person does that. Is it kind of the same thing that you don't need to perfectly predict everything from the start, but you just want to hire people that are flexible, that they can adapt within some parameters, of course, not like randomly, but...
Yeah, we've actually, when we recruit for many roles, one of the last things we put in the application is, are you okay to do other things? That's maybe the things that you would consider to be out of scope. Because it's a startup, we would expect you to give us a hand when the hand is needed. So I think that answers your question to some extent, that it is okay and people should be okay to do that. Because, and I actually talked about this again from my own experience building a team for Persona, that not everyone is, I want to say suitable, but maybe this is a bit harsh, but startup life is not for everyone. You need to have a certain set of traits to be able to enjoy the startup life. And one of those traits is being able to, you know, participate in other tasks and help contribute, like help complete those tasks. So I would say that you don't have to have like a very rigid job description, which doesn't change, and you cannot add additional tasks when the tasks, when the help is needed. But I do actually advise from time to time to review it and see, you know, how it changes and see how the person feels about those tasks.
That's a good one. Let's talk about culture. Culture is, it's like a difficult thing to, like, what does culture truly mean? You know, like, it's not obvious. People, I think, mean different things. And I think it's, in my perspective, it's someone connected to those things we say, like the vision and the mission and the values, because those are all related terms. My personal opinion is that when companies talk about values and mission statements, usually it's BS. Usually it's BS. Like, they will say, for example, oh, we want to, like, make the world more eco-friendly or like, or whatever. No, you want to make more money. Like, that's what you want. And you're using this as a vehicle for the most part. I think that's the reality of most companies. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think people, especially younger people, they want to have some meaning in their life, in their work, because they have so many options, right? Like, remote work basically means there's no geographical limits if you're good at what you do. You can work in an unlimited pool of companies. So the company needs to have a reason why behind it do things. And this needs to be real. It needs to be a culture, not like a document that says, oh, we care about the environment or stuff like that. It needs to be real. How can you build that? Is this something you build or is this something you are in the first place? Because I think it's something you are. The values of the leadership team of the founder ultimately shape the culture. That's my understanding of it.
I agree with you on this one. I think company culture always comes from the leadership. And if the leader is saying that I want the company to be like this, and often people want to be or want to build a company culture that's very different than how they are. This is, I think, a human thing. You always want something that you are not. But I think the company culture is always very similar and reflects kind of the founder. For me, culture is a mix between how people work, right? The work ethic, how people interact with one another, with clients, with the, I don't know, anyone else working in the business. And then what are the boundaries? Like, what are the things that we don't do? And I think that the mix is basically what the company culture is. So in my opinion, it comes a lot from the founder. Like, the founder is the one to decide what kind of work ethic they want to have in the business, what kind of values they want to set, how they want people to interact, and what are the absolute no's in case they happen. So I would say it stems from the founder. And I agree with you about the vision, the mission. It is important to have it at some point. Because, you know, when we were 84 in the agency, we did have a problem, like, where are we going next? And that was a big problem. But I also think it's not just about the vision, the mission. It's also about goals. Like, what kind of goals do you have for the next 2 years? You don't have to think about 5 or 10 years. Just think about 2 years. What exactly do you want to do? Because if you have those goals for 2 years, then people are motivated. They know exactly what direction they are going. So I think goals at this point in a startup, probably goals are, I would say, maybe even more important than the mission and the vision.
I think for most people in a startup environment, because a startup is a high risk environment, right? Like, you don't go to a startup because you want to fast-paced and also high risk, because it might never work out, basically, right? Like, if you go and work in Coca-Cola, you know, like, okay, like, even if I don't do my job well, the company is not going to go under, you know, probably, like, that type of thing. So I think in a startup, my feeling at least, is that people ultimately want to be on a team that's kind of winning. Like, they are doing well. They there's growth. There's a trajectory that's upwards. So this is what I've tried to do internally, to create not necessarily a vision in a silly way that, oh, we care about saving puppies and stuff, but more so in the sense of, we want to be the best at what we do. And if you're on this team, you are on the winning team. And this is why we're achieving this. And then that gets into the goals that you mentioned. And I found that this is sometimes difficult for people. I've made a lot of hiring mistakes, by the way. I've hired people that I had to let go, that sometimes they quit even. So it's difficult because not everybody wants that. Like, a lot of people want to kind of enter a company, have some sort of work, and then basically live their life, you know, like, not care that much about work. So for those people, it's difficult. But for the people that actually care about being great, I think this is super motivating.
Yeah. At some point, someone told me, and it stuck with me for a very, very long time, for years now, that in a startup, to really be able to, you know, enjoy the journey and succeed, you have to be a creator. Like, you have to love the process of creating something. Because in a startup, you always create, and it doesn't matter that you create, I don't know, ads or, you know, emails, but you also create processes, you create a team, like, you build things. So you have to be kind of a builder. And I think this is very important. Like, in order to really enjoy startup, you have to be like a creator. Otherwise, you know, doing a day to day and just, you know, kind of hanging around is not gonna work.
I agree. That's a good
point. It doesn't. And at some point, again, you know, it goes back to what we discussed at the very beginning. At some point, you will need the people who are just going to do the work you give them without creating. But at the very early stage, you more need creators than just, you know, people doing bare minimum.
What's next for you? Like, what do you want to do in the next, like, in this year, for example?
So next, of course, is to focus on the e-com. For Prosana, still want to focus a lot on automating, outsourcing, improving how we deliver the service. But, you know, to be honest, I never know what's next. Like, I have goals, but then, you know, life has its way of doing things the way it should be. So I guess we'll see what's next.
And what's the best way for people to contact you in case, like, they want to, like, especially, like, either connect with you or learn about Prosana?
The best way would probably be LinkedIn. So I would encourage people to connect with me through LinkedIn. I guess my surname is going to be somewhere written because it's a pretty difficult one. But I would say LinkedIn is the best way to reach out.
And why did you want to leave Lithuania? Probably because of the weather, I guess.
Yeah. This time, yeah, because of the weather. I cannot be very enthusiastic about the weather this week here in Spain. It's been cloudy and rainy, but overall it's quite nice. Most of the days it's sunny, so it's amazing and warm.
Nice. Thank you for taking the time, Erica. It was a really nice chat.
Thank you, George. It was amazing as well. Appreciate you having me here.
My pleasure.
Thank you.